This is podcast number 108 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I want to tell you about Mary Mapes Dodge. You may wonder why I'm talking about a woman born in New York in 1831 in month two. The reason is simple. She is best known for her book, Hans Brinker or the Silver Skates. As one said, on closing the book, one did not seem to have been reading about Holland, but to have been living in Holland. So let's start there. Mary Mapes Dodge was filled with admiration for the heroic little nation after reading Motley's Rise of the Dutch Republic and History of the United Netherlands. If you haven't listened to podcast number 26, I hope you will, where I talk about brave little Holland, a country whose story is reflected in our own American story. Mary started improvising a bedtime story about a brother and his little sister to her little boys, and the book grew from there. She did her research, and I quote, she ransacked libraries, public and private, for books about Holland, made every traveler whom she knew tell her his tale of that unique country, and submitted every chapter to the test of the criticism of two Hollanders living near her. It was the genius of patience and toil, the conscientious touching and retouching of the true artist, which wrought the seemingly spontaneous and simple task. It was an instant success, and had that been her only achievement, she would remain a noteworthy woman. But let me give you a sampling of what was written about her, starting with a tribute paid to her following her death, wherein she was described as so triumphantly alive and joyous, so in love with life and raptured with the world, a woman of singular radiance and cheer. She was the recognized leader in juvenile literature for nearly a third of a century. It was her mission to minister to the thoughts and interests and aspirations of childhood, and for this she was divinely fitted. She married the love of her life at age 20. A young lawyer, but he suddenly and unexpectedly died just 7 years later, leaving her with two little boys to raise. She determined that earning a living through writing was her best option, and after working for a time with Harriet Beecher Stowe on a magazine called Hearth and Home, she was offered a chief editor position over a new children's magazine, wherein she was given complete reign. She wanted the name itself to appeal to children all over the world, and it was she who decided to call it St. Nicholas, the most successful children's magazine ever created, and she produced 12 monthly volumes a year for 30 years. That's just mind-boggling. Her aim and her work was to make child readers happy first, and through this happiness to lead them on to higher and nobler living. It was a golden treasury of stories, verses, and pictures to raise a generation of children who were strong, warm, beautiful, and true. She enlisted contributions from the great souls of her day, William Cullen Bryant, Longfellow, John Whittier, Lord Tennyson. Frances Burnett introduced her little Lord Fauntleroy in its pages. On meeting Rudyard Kipling, he asked Mary, "Aren't you going to ask me to write?" She replied, "Are you up to it?" After all, he had only written to adults up to that point. He replied, "I must and shall, for my sister and I used to scramble for St. Nicholas every month when I was a lad." A few weeks later, he sent her the first two of his famous jungle stories for the magazine. To Whittier, she wrote, "I cannot help hoping that among your unwritten poems there may be some song or story for children, some Christmas thought, or some personal reminiscence of a sleigh ride or boyish coasting. In short, a legend or something from school life, home life, or thought life that you may feel like giving to the children. If so, thousands upon thousands of them will be glad, and so will we editors be, and so will you be, for I know you truly like making others happy." Who could resist? She received his contribution shortly thereafter. By the way, you can read copies of this wonderful children's magazine on Internet Archive. What she did was merely the expression of what she was. The inspiration of the magazine was a reflection of the power of her personality. It was but the flowering of a noble nature, of noble gifts patiently and faithfully used for noble ends. So you may be wondering, as I did, what kind of home did she grow up in that produced this woman so triumphantly alive and joyous, so in love with life and raptured with the world? We're given a few glimpses. Her father, a much-loved professor, never sent any of his daughters to school. They gained their education at home under carefully chosen tutors and governesses whose instruction included French, music, drawing, and Latin. But her love for and the influence of great writers she owed to the influence of her father. There were no children's books in her youth, but their home was filled with books to which the children were given constant and ready access. The theory of her father was that children instinctively like good reading if they are fortunate enough to find it. So she was raised to love the Bible, the old English ballads, Shakespeare, Milton, Bunyan, Walter Scott. It was a home where the best people and the best influences found always an open door and an open heart. When Mary became a mother, she patterned her own home after the home she was raised in. She filled it with rare and beautiful things, and there were books everywhere. The drawing room, library, and music rooms were the center of her life. They were gathering places. After her husband died, she went home. There had been some financial losses, and her father now lived in the countryside in more modest circumstances, but that didn't matter. There was an old abandoned cottage on the property, and she took her little boys out there, knocked down a wall, and cleaned it up. She didn't need money to make it cozy. She furnished it with used furniture pieces and hung mosses and leaves around the window where she could look out on the beautiful countryside and forests. Of course, there were books and flowers everywhere. This became her workspace, where she could focus on her writing and still be close to her boys. Her little boys were the joy of her life, and she was ever their companion, helper, and friend. She entered into all their daily interests, their work and play. She flew kites with them, skated with them, tramped miles beside them, collecting samples. Whatever subject interested them, she studied in secret. When her elder boy, a born inventor, began to care for the things of his craft, it was she who was ready to explain to him the crystallization of iron, the effects of heat and cold, and the laws of statics and dynamics. When the younger, a born musician, began to think of harmonies, it was she who seemed to know more of the science and art of music than any teacher. She kept before them the highest ideal of character and left details of conduct to their instructed moral sense. There's a sentence worth pondering. Let me quote that again. She kept before them the highest ideal of character and left details of conduct to their instructed moral sense. She remained their most intimate friend and advisor. And she followed in her father's example. She was a brilliant conversationalist. She was known for her depth and tenderness of feeling, her intellectual poise, spiritual insight, and simplicity of expression. In the home where she grew up, vacant chairs always stood at the table for the chance a visitor may come and eat with them, and the world daily came to their door. She was raised on listening and engaging in conversations with men of science, poets, painters, statesmen, philosophers, journalists. The talk was of scientific achievements, of music, painting, and the drama, of great philanthropic and benevolent movements all over the world, of contemporary history, projected laws and reasons for those laws, Her father was a gifted conversationalist, as was his mother. His father patterned his home after the home he grew up in. His mother had been saluted by George Washington himself, had danced with Lafayette, and she delighted her grandsons with stories of the historic past. Sunshine, music, flowers, the heartiest good fellowship, and with children as their companions, filled the house. No atmosphere could be more delightful to live in. It was said of Mary's home, much more than a housekeeper, she is a homemaker. The order and neatness, the economy and routine of her management are simply the foundation on which the beauty and serenity of the home rest. Is it any surprise that Mary's son established a home patterned after the home in which he was raised, which was patterned after the home in which his mother was raised, which was patterned after the home in which his grandfather was raised? Sadly, her younger son didn't live to adulthood. We may not be able to invite poets and painters and philosophers to our dinner table in person, but we can develop the art of conversation and share their stories, thoughts, and ideas as though they are there, and accomplish the wonderful things that brought such joy to Mary's life and which consequently influenced untold millions of children all over the world. We can follow her example and be companions to our children, trusted confidants and advisors, more concerned with happiness than with things. We can fill our homes with sunshine, flowers, and books, and create homes where gracious freedom, like the air of open fields, its silence hath a speech of royal welcome to the friends who reach its threshold. An ideal worth reaching towards. Bye-bye. See you next time.